Next guest speaker is going to be Jeff Wamsley. Jeff is, he's the gentleman who orchestrates the Mothman Museum, the Mothman Festival every September. And he's also, you're the curator of the museum, is that right, Jeff?
Yeah.
He's also the curator of the Mothman Museum. So, further ado, here is Jeff Wamsley.
Thank you, Jason. Glad to be here today. Come from Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Most people here, I think, have probably heard of Mothman by now, either whether it be the motion picture, Mothman Prophecies, some of the documentaries, the Mothman Festival. I'd like to make sure that everybody knows about that festival. It's in September. I think it's the 19th and 20th. We've got websites and all that kind of stuff. So, and a lot of people here are familiar to me from the festival. We have the guys over here from Ghostly Talk. They'll be actually hosting all the guest speakers. So if anybody here is interested in being a guest speaker, you can talk to these guys and we'll get you set up. I've just got basically a PowerPoint presentation on some of the things about Mothman. For those of you who are not real familiar with the Mothman legacy, legend, story, whatever you want to call it. I grew up in Point Pleasant. I was about 5 years old when all the Mothman sightings started. So a lot of people always ask me in these interviews, you know, have I ever seen the Mothman? And the answer is no, but I've talked to a lot of people that had encounters or, seen this creature. Some people thought it was just a giant bird. Other people felt that it was something more than that. Brief description of Point Pleasant in general. We sit right across the Ohio River. About 2.5 hours, 3 hour drive from here. Point Pleasant is known here's a little bit of a location on the map. But Point Pleasant is known for its rich history in the Revolutionary War. The Twin Dewey Park, which sits downtown, is the site of the first battle of Point Pleasant, first battle of the Revolutionary War back in 1774. We have a lot of Indian history, and some people will talk about the Chief Cornstalk's curse here in a few minutes also. This is a Twin Dewey Park. This is the battle monument. It sits right where the Ohio River meets the Kanawha River. It's a real nice park. There's a lot that Point Pleasant has to offer, so if you do come to Point Pleasant, visit the Twin Dewey Park. The River Museum sits right across the street. Mothman Museum down the street, so there's a lot to see and do if you do come to Point Pleasant. Getting back to Cornstalk's curse, Chief Cornstalk and his son both were murdered by white settlers during this time. And some people believe that some of Point Pleasant's history and bad luck, if you will, basically the Mothman sightings, the Silver Bridge collapse in 67, were all attributed to Cornstalk's curse. It is said that he cursed the town of Point Pleasant for 200 years because of this deal that had went bad on some land disputes and stuff. But him and his son both were murdered. And some people felt that, you know, some of the things that happened in Point Pleasant were due to this Cornstalk's curse. He is actually buried in the Twin Dewey Park, where the picture that I had just showed you just a few seconds ago there. Most people know Point Pleasant because of the Silver Bridge collapse. Okay, this happened in 1967. 46 people lost their lives. This was also depicted in the movie, although in the movie it took 15 minutes for the bridge to collapse. In real life, it took about 2 minutes for that whole bridge to collapse into the river. December 15th, 1967. And there again, that Chief Cornstalk's curse comes back into play. The bridge actually collapsed at the height of the Mothman sightings. And this would have been in 67. During World War II, you had what we call the TNT area. It still exists today. It is actually a bird sanctuary, a wildlife preserve now. But this is where most of the Mothman sightings or big bird sightings took place. During World War II, it was where they manufactured bombs and TNT. You know, for the war effort. That's how it got its name. It was basically a city within itself, 24/7. You can go there today. We actually do some guided bus tours up there now, but you can go into some of the open bunkers and you can see where all these Mothman sightings took place. It's about 6-7 miles outside of town. A lot of people believe that if this creature or bird avoided the city, it was on the outskirts of town. And if you go to the TNT area today, it's still basically the same it was back in the 60s or even earlier than that. This is an aerial shot of the TNT area. Some of the Mothman sightings took place in what they call the North Power Plant. It's a huge three-story building. You had a South Power Plant and a North Power Plant. The long straight stretch road all the way going through the middle from the top to the bottom is what they call Fairgrounds Road. And most of the kids in the 60s when the Mothman sightings took place, this is where they would go to drag race. Actually, they still go up there today and drag race. And this is the early picture, probably early 70s, late 60s, of the North Power Plant. And this is where the first official sighting took place. These buildings were torn down in the early 90s due to liabilities to the state. A lot of people that I went to school with were hanging out on the top of these buildings, putting graffiti on the top and everything. A couple of them actually fell out. They survived, but they fell out. So the state came in and tore these buildings down. I wish today that these buildings were still there because it'd give you an idea of actually how big and gigantic the buildings were. But we'll get into the first sightings here in just a second, but just give you a quick background. This is a picture of one of the igloos or bunkers that are up in the TNT area. There's over 100 of these igloos strategically placed in the TNT area because during World War II, everything was disguised from the air. If you would happen to fly over even today, you'd never know that you were where the igloos are. You can literally walk up and stand right outside of one of these igloos and not know you're standing beside one. These were designed with about 4 foot thick concrete walls. They stored ammunitions in them. There's only about 3 or 4 of them that are open today. The rest of them were all leased by private individual companies. Nobody knows what they store in those, but I can vouch that the FBI was up there 2 years ago for about 2 weeks. Enough said on that. So we don't know what these other companies are storing inside of them. Somebody tried to get into one, I think. Okay. These are some more stone structures that are up there. Most people in Point Pleasant call this Stonehenge. These are giant aqueducts that still stand today that were built during World War II. You had a railway line that went underneath, and they would load chemicals and things like that into these. But they're very eerie looking. It almost looks like something out of a World War II movie because they left all these, you know, behind years later. And you can see the curved part at the top, and that's where the drums would set with the chemicals in them, and the train cars would go underneath them and load. During the 60s, all this was non-existent. You know, this is where the kids would go run around and drag race and everything else. But these are some of the initial sightings that took place. Long story short, I was 5 years old when all this started, but I grew up about 4 doors away from the two couples that were in the car the first night. The first official sightings in the Point Pleasant area. Now, a lot of people don't realize that there were a couple sightings before the Point Pleasant sightings, and one of those was in Salem, West Virginia, which sets about 2 hours, south. Let's see, probably north of Point Pleasant. Okay, and this was on November 14, 1966. There was a gentleman named Newell Partridge who owned a German Shepherd named Bandit. And what had happened was him and his family were all sitting around watching TV one night about 11 o'clock. I had the chance to interview him about 5 years ago, and he does come to the festival from time to time. And he said the TV started winding up and making a real loud noise, and the screen basically exploded into the floor. There had been numerous UFO sightings, you know, at that time. He ran outside to see if there was something outside. He said he seen two mechanical red lights in the farm pasture, you know, in the pasture past his house. His dog, which was a full-grown German Shepherd, bolted out the door, ran out into the field, and they never saw the dog again. And he said that was very strange because it was a family dog. It would, you know, back and forth. and then 2 nights later, actually, 1 night later, you had the sighting started in Point Pleasant. What brings this into the whole Point Pleasant story was those four witnesses the first night in Point Pleasant claimed to have seen a dead German Shepherd laying beside the road as you come back into the city limits of Point Pleasant. Noel Partridge heard about this through the AP wire and called the authorities in Point Pleasant to see if that may have been his dog, because if this creature or bird that they were seeing was big enough, it could have picked up a full-grown dog. And as a matter of fact, during the Mothman sightings in Point Pleasant, they would not let the children out in the elementary schools for recess for a good while, because they didn't realize, you know, if it was a bird or some sort of, you know, some people described it as almost like a prehistoric bird, and it could have came down and picked up a kid and, you know, took off with him and stuff. But that's a picture of Noel. That was during the interview that I did with him. This is an actual press clipping from the account where his dog did disappear. That was in Doddridge County. And like I said, he described everything in detail. And after all this happened, he had several UFO accounts. All kinds of weird stuff was going on, you know, with Noel after that. There's another. We have all these archives in the museum. You know, we call it a research center too. You can sit down and look through all this stuff and make accounts. This right here is what most people know Point Pleasant for, that first initial sightings. This is a color photo that was taken back in 86, I think, of that North Power Plant. You can see all the graffiti at the top. Jimmy Fisher, I know all those people there. They shouldn't have been up there, but they did tell me how they did it. And they would go up on the top floor and hold their buddy by the ankles and hang them over the top and let them paint their names on the top there. And that immediately stopped after the state people came along and took care of that. There's not a lot of existing photos of the power plants anymore. And, you know, we've got several of those. But you can see, if you fall off the top floor there, it's a pretty good distance down right there. And here's some pictures that were taken from the inside. You have a lot of concrete catwalks and things like that, and that's where a lot of the machinery and stuff took place. You had two couples, Roger Scarberry and his wife Linda. Roger lived directly across the street from my family. Linda lived four doors down. I remember as a little kid, Roger always working on his car. That was the car they were in that night. It was a 57 Chevy Bel Air. It was black and white, and I've got a picture of it on here too. But that was the infamous 57 Chevy that they were in that first night. This is the first official headline from the Point Pleasant Register the day after the sightings took place. And this is almost like a Holy Grail type clipping, because you just don't find these clippings laying around in the attics or anything. This came from Linda Scarberry's collection that I acquired when I worked on the first book. And you can see the date, and the price was 5 cents for the paper. I think the paper now is 50 cents, and they just recently cut back circulation. They don't even print a paper on Monday, so, you know, thanks to the internet. But this is a valuable clipping right here. This is a clipping from the Athens Messenger. Now, the Athens Messenger was from Athens, Ohio, about an hour away. The important thing about the Athens Messenger is there was a reporter that worked in the Point Pleasant office for the Athens Messenger named Mary Heyer. And she's the one that took responsibility for breaking these stories, putting them in the paper. Now, most people thought she was crazy to do that, and she did later have some visits from these infamous men in black over the stuff that she was putting in the paper. She actually had a column that she wrote called Where the Waters Mingle. That's a picture right there on the left of Steve and Mary Mallett and Roger and Linda Scarberry. Now, Steve and Mary Mallett still live in Point Pleasant. They will not grant interviews. Linda is about the only one out of the four that's ever done any type of an interview or anything. That's a picture of the car. And I don't know where that was taken. That came from Linda's collection as well. And it had the white and black interior in it. And there's another close-up picture. I like the Beetle boots there that Roger's got on. But, you know, it's weird because, you know, you look back at, you know, how long ago that was, and they have their high school jackets on. And they were graduated from high school and recently married. I think Linda said she was 19 or 20 years old at the time. She still lives in Point Pleasant. This is what Roger drew for the Sheriff's Department. What happened was, is after they seen this creature is standing in the middle of the road up by the North Power Plant, They got scared. It ran into the North Power Plant. Linda said it wobbled. It did not run like an athlete would run, but she said it wobbled almost like an ostrich would run to town, and stopped first at Tiny's Drive-In, which was just a little restaurant, almost like what a Sonic restaurant is today. They ran inside, talked to the owner, whose name was Gary Northup. He saw how scared they were. They were kind of waiting to see if they needed to go to the police. He saw how upset they were. He encountered something that's really shook them up. What a lot of people don't know, too, is I had two nurses verify that Linda and Mary both were treated for shock that night at the hospital, Pleasant Valley Hospital. That was never put in public record or in the newspapers. That was all secondhand information that came to me after I started working on the first book. So I know that these people saw something that scared them bad enough where they had to be sedated. But that is the drawing. You can see the two red eyes at the top. They said it looked like it had no neck, and like its head was protruded down into the shoulder area. Linda said that the wings were up above its, behind its head, almost like an angel. She said the wings almost looked like an angel's wings. And most other descriptions matched this up. You have to remember, it wasn't just these four people. After this happened, you had about 100 reported sightings. I feel that there was another 100 that never reported anything, just because they were afraid to go to the authorities and stuff. These right here are the actual police reports that we have in a museum. These are the handwritten documents. You may have seen these on, Sci-Fi Investigates, Paranormal State came in. And we have three of the four eyewitness handwritten depositions here, front and back. And these also came from Linda. She said the sheriff's deputies immediately set them down in separate rooms before they could get a chance to get together and compare notes. And they said, we want you to write down exactly what you saw on your own. Nobody's going to, you know, because they thought it was just some kids, you know, coming up with some sort of a hoax or whatever. Okay, November 16th, 1966, Marcella Bennett. She probably, out of all the people I've ever talked to, came the closest to this creature. As a matter of fact, she passed away about 3 months ago. But her interview was very riveting in the description that she had. Ironically, her maiden name is Walmsley, but it is no relation to my side of the family. What had happened was, is she and her husband had heard about this Mothman sighting up in the TNT area. Well, her sister lived in the TNT area in a little bungalow house near the igloos. So their immediate reaction was, let's go up and scare the kids, her nieces and nephews. We're just going to go up because obviously this is a big joke. When they were getting ready to leave the house that night at about 11 o'clock, she began to get into the car. And whatever this thing was stood up beside of the car, and she immediately thought it was just a person dressed in khaki clothes. She said it looked like a man dressed with khaki colored clothes on, until she started to look up, and then she noticed that it was about 7 foot tall, and she said it wasn't a man. And that's when she got scared. She had her 2-year-old daughter in her arms, and as she turned to run, she tripped and fell on the baby, and she was, you know, concerned for the baby. She ran into the house. All the kids that were outside ran into the house. I've talked to several of those kids that are now adults, and they did verify the story. And whatever this thing was, walked onto the porch as they shut the curtains. You know, they shut all the curtains, shut the door, called the sheriff's department. By the time they got up there, you know, the thing had either flown away or walked away. And this is an artist's depiction of, you know, what had happened that night. November 25th, 1966, Tom Urey. This is the first official daytime sighting. And Tom comes to the festival every year, and he should be there this year. But his sighting was at about 7:30 in the morning on Route 62, which was just a few miles past the TNT area. He was on his way to work in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And his story has always been that it was a gigantic bird of some sort. But he said it was enormous. It was the biggest bird he'd ever seen in his life. And at first he thought it was a helicopter, because he said it was dark, and it almost came out of nowhere, out of the cornfield on the left side of the road. And he said as he drove, he kept looking up, and it was circling his car. And he said every time it would take a circle, it'd get a little closer. Another circle would get a little closer to his car. So he was genuinely scared, scared enough to where he stopped and called the sheriff's department at a payphone in Mason, West Virginia. It's kind of funny because Tom is always, he's almost misquoted in John Keel's book. They made it sound more like it was a creature, but he's still adamant that what he saw was a gigantic bird, wingspan 10 to 12 feet. And that's a pretty good sized bird. Here's some more clippings. This actually came from the Stars and Stripes newspaper, which was the newspaper that was distributed to Vietnam soldiers. So this news spread really quick, even as far away as to, you know, the soldiers in Vietnam and stuff. So, you know, it was worldwide news. John Keel, who wrote the book Mothman Prophecies, picked up on all this stuff over the AP wire. He told me he was in Kentucky investigating a winged cat sighting, and then he chuckled about that. But he heard about this, and he quickly came to the Point Pleasant area to investigate. So these are just some of the sighting reports. And a lot of these people, it shows their ages in here now. These guys or girls or women are you know, in their 50s and 60s now, and a lot of these people still live in a Point Pleasant area. Okay, this brings up the Athens Messenger bit with Mary Heyer. She lived real close to my family. What's really strange about this whole thing is she died only 4 years after the Mothman sightings. She was the one who claimed that these men in black would come into her office and tell her not to put the stuff in the papers, that all she was doing was causing panic. Her husband died before she did. She was 54 when she passed away. No kids. She has two nieces that still live in the area. One of them was an actual Mothman witness. She won't talk about any of it. The other one is a prominent medical field person. I emailed her. I've known her for probably 35 years. And all I did in my emails asked her yes or no, did the men in black, did this really happen? And her email was yes, it did happen. And that's an early picture of Mary Heyer in her office. I don't think that's one of the men in black there on the right, but, you know. She said she would look out her window at night, see these cars parked out in front of her house, the phone tap deal. They would come into her office. She said she noticed one thing about these men in black, actually two things. They were very pale in complexion, and number two is when she would talk to them, they would never blink their eyes. And she thought that was very strange. They would ask for people that she'd never heard of, make up names, pseudonames and things like that, pick up a pencil, look at it like they'd never seen a pencil before in their life. So she just thought it was very peculiar the way they acted. But they told her that she had no business putting any of this stuff in the newspapers or anything. This was her article that she wrote called Where the Waters Mingle. We have several of these in the museum. It's just a little weekly article she would write. You know, it was a small town atmosphere. So-and-so had a birthday, so-and-so, you know, got sent to Vietnam, you know, things like that. And I always wished I could have had a chance to meet her. Tom Ury knew her very well because he delivered the Athens Messenger paper. She was the person that was in charge of the circulation and stuff. And he said she was a very honest person and that, you know, that he didn't think that she would make any of this stuff up. A lot of UFO activity going on during the Mothman sightings. So a lot of people thought the UFO activity, the Mothman sightings, even the bridge collapse was all kind of related somehow. Now, what's ironic too about Dayton is John Keel told me that he had called Wright-Patterson Air Force Base on several occasions when these UFO sightings were occurring down there because he had heard that they were running Air Force maneuvers along the Ohio River because of the terrain being so close to that as in Vietnam. If that was the case, they neglected to tell people that they were going to be running any of these type of maneuvers along the riverbanks along Point Pleasant there. But there was all kinds of UFO sightings at this time. So these are just some of the articles and stuff that we have. And this is dating in 67. We clear up to 68, 69 on a lot of these. Dolly Grady was my next door neighbor as well. She still lives in Point Pleasant. She lived directly beside Linda Scarberry's family. And she said they would have roundtable discussions. John Keel, Mary Heyer, all these witnesses from Mothman would come together and just sit down and hash things out and talk about it. She would kind of be like a fly on the wall and go over and listen to what all they were saying. But she watched the silver object fly right over top of her house in broad daylight, just like there wasn't anything to it. You know, she said it just whizzed right over top of the house, and said that, you know, watched it for about 10 minutes. So this was all going on right around where I was living. My mother still lives there. Okay. John Keel comes into the story. I get a lot of people asking me about John Keel, updates on him. I got an email last week from his caretaker. He's about 81, 82 years old now, and he is in a nursing home in New York City. But he did help me some with my books and research, and I have a lot of respect for him. He has a very dry sense of humor, but to this day, he told me that, you know, there was some strange things going on in the Point Pleasant area. Obviously, that's an early photo of John Keel. This is the little, just a small press blurb that was in the paper announcing the arrival of John Keel coming to Point Pleasant. That people just knew him as a writer. They didn't realize that he was going to put a book out that would change the state of Point Pleasant. This right here was from a private letter that he sent to Linda Scarberry and her family, talking about some of these men in black and some of the strange things that were going on. He told me that he had cameras come up missing, he had film come up missing, his phone lines were tapped in New York at his apartment. Very paranoid about the whole thing. But I have a lot of his letters and stuff that he would send back and forth to these witnesses. You know, back then you just didn't have the fax machines or the email or anything, so we have the actual letters that went back and forth. But he talks about a lot of weird things going on, and some of the, you know, men in black. Talked about Air Force uniforms. These people would come dressed up in Air Force attire, but he said a lot of times they would have the patches of the medals would be wrong, and he could almost tell that they were just people dressed up, you know, posing as military people. What's his name from Salem? Noel Partridge told me the same thing. He said the day after he reported his sighting, a couple military people came to talk to him, and he said he knew right off that they weren't military, just the way they were dressed and stuff. What did they see? Most people describe this thing as 6 to 7 feet tall, wingspan 10 to 12 feet, and the famous red eyes, the glowing red eyes. One witness told me that the red was almost a deep magenta, and it would hypnotize, you know, people when they would see it. That most people couldn't describe any facial features because they were looking at the eyes the whole time. They did chase Linda and the other three in the car the night going back into Point Pleasant. They were doing, she said, up to about 90 miles an hour, and it just glided over the car. It did not try to keep up. It wasn't struggling to keep up. And the most chilling thing that she ever told me in the interviews that I had done with Linda was she said the wingspan was so large on this thing that as it was flying over their car, that she said every now and then it would just flap its wings, just, you know, just every so often. It wasn't trying to keep up. But she said the wingspan was so big as when it flapped its wings, the tips of the wings hit the bottom of the car doors on the car and scratched the paint. And she said when they got back, that Roger was mad because he just had the car painted. And she said there were scuff marks on the side of the doors where those wings had come down and hit the side of the car doors and stuff. And some people didn't see, like I said, any facial features, large wings. Some said feathers. Other people said it was almost like a, you know, just a dark, grayish-looking collared creature. This is probably the one that I would feel is the closest to the descriptions and stuff. A lot of little kids and stuff that come into the museum almost look at Mothman as almost the Spider-Man, Batman type creature and stuff. So, you know, you have different representations of what this thing was. Now, some people came from West Virginia University, had a professor came in who said it was nothing but a sandhill crane. Most of the original witnesses that I talked to were insulted, you know, by that. They said it was not a bird that they had encountered. and there's the prominent red eyes. Searching for an explanation. This picture was taken during the press conference at the Mason County Sheriff's Department. They had this press conference. That's when it kind of broke worldwide. That's a very rare photo right there, too. Some of those guys were put on regular routine patrols up in the TNT area. The guy holding the phone actually quit over the whole incident. He put his badge down and said, "I'm not going back up there," and he resigned from that position. But this was one of the theories right here of what people were seeing was a sandhill crane. There again, that's a debatable issue right there. And it says maybe a huge crane. Some people thought it was an owl, a large barn owl of some sort. And speaking of owls, they actually killed a white snow owl during that week of the sightings. We used to have it on display at the Mothman Museum. I loaned it to the River Museum, and they won't give it back. So you have to go to the River Museum to see it. That's a picture of it right there. And the guy that shot it was immediately fined. The game warden was hanging around after he shot it and gave him a ticket for that and everything. Here's some more UFO sighting information. Lots of UFOs and strange lights in the sky. John Keel said it got to so much commonplace that he would take a flashlight, flash it up at the lights, and it would flash back. So, it was just a common thing to see these UFOs. The Silver Bridge tragedy happened on December 15, 1967, right at the height of rush hour in the Christmas season. Just about everybody in Point Pleasant was affected by this, and still today, there's a lot of people that have deep ties to the bridge collapse. Carolyn Harris, who I put the festival on with, has the little diner on Main Street. Her husband and her son both were on that bridge when it collapsed. So it's real easy to find somebody in Point Pleasant that had something to do, with that tragedy. But one of the eye bolts snapped on the Ohio side. If you can imagine a bicycle chain with the cogs going through the chain, one of those cogs snapped or sheared after about 40 years of decay. And when that happened, the whole bridge tumbled into the river. 46 people were killed. Some people felt that this Men in Black, Mothman stuff was all related to the Silver Bridge tragedy. And of course, like I said, it was depicted in the movie as well. But there's several good documentaries on the bridge disaster that gives you a little bit of history about what actually happened. That prompted the government to go through. There was another bridge exactly like the Silver Bridge in St. Mary's, West Virginia. They immediately shut that bridge down and dismantled that bridge because it was the exact same design as the Silver Bridge. And that's a real eerie picture. That was the ramp on the West Virginia side, and they left that ramp there for at least 10 years. I remember about the mid-70s is when they took that bridge down. Right now, there's a memorial that sits there with bricks with all the people who died on it and things like that. So, but that was that picture for me kind of sums up the whole disaster. And this came out of Popular Mechanics magazine. They actually had a section on there about what happened with the bridge collapse. Point Pleasant today, this is just a picture of where the North Power Plant used to stand. It's public property. You can go up there unless you see the fences here, but that's where it all started. You had some sightings inside of the Point Pleasant area and also across the river in DeGalpolis and the Cheshire area. And a lot of people ask me about when was the last sighting. I get emails constantly, literally from all over the world, Serbia, Croatia, Mexico, of creatures or birds that are described almost the same as what people were seeing in Point Pleasant. Now, if it's related, I don't know how we can verify that, but the descriptions are very, very similar. This is where the bridge stood. That's where the memorial is now. And that's right in downtown Point Pleasant. Main Street has never changed. I've got an old home movie footage that my cousin took driving across the Silver Bridge, took a right and come down Main Street, and it still looks the same today as it did back in 40, 45 years ago. This is where we have the festival, right here on Main Street. For those of you who have been to the festival before, the Main Street will be blocked off this year. so nobody will be run over by a vehicle from, we almost had that happen last year, so. We will have Main Street blocked off. Okay, that's a picture of Carolyn Harris there. She has Harris Steakhouse, and if you've been into her diner, it's like walking back into 1966 all over again. She is the person that I help, and we put the festival on together, and she's been there. She just had her 40th anniversary just a few weeks ago there for the restaurant. These are the two books. I did the first one in 2001. I co-authored that with Donnie Surgeon Jr. He also grew up in Point Pleasant, a little bit younger than me, but we worked together on that book. And then in 2005, I did the Mothman Behind the Red Eyes. First book has a lot of archives, press clippings, newspaper reports, rare stuff like that. The second book has more interviews in it. It's very tough to get these people to talk about, you know, what they encountered. I'm still trying to get to Roger Scarberry, but it's not working out too well. I'm still on the hunt as far as those rare witnesses that were there when all this happened. The problem that I ran into with after the movie came out was that everybody and her brother had seen the Mothman, and everybody and her brother had drove across the bridge right before it fell, and you know, they seen the exposure that the movie and the documentaries were bringing, so it was real hard to distinguish between somebody who really was there when it happened or just wanted to get on one of these TV shows and stuff. So, it's still a quest of mine to find these people and see if we can bring more. Obviously, this is outdated, okay? So this will be the 8th Mothman Festival. I think it's on the 19th and 20th of this year, and Jason and everybody from Ghostly Talk and Scott and everybody will be there. And weird U.S. Author back here, Willis, right? Okay. Which I'm hoping he does the Lincoln talk when he comes, because I think that would really be cool. So he'll be there. And anybody else that wants to come, you can get a hold of us, and we'll go from there. But basically, this is old too, because the Mothman Museum has been there for 3.5 years now. Thousands and thousands of people come into the museum every year. We're working on some new props and some new displays to bring in. So we actually have one of the maps, the Haunted Ohio maps, in there right as you come through the door, so everybody gets to see that. But I invite everybody to come to the festival. And this pretty much sums it up for me. You know, didn't have anything on Lincoln or Kennedy, but we got the Mothman stuff. So if you have any questions, I'll hang around for a little bit. And I hope to see everybody in Point Pleasant, either at the museum or the festival. Okay?